This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by GiftTrek.net. You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 53, Don't F with the Genes. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including Malcolm McDowell's Star Trek rant, Captain Picard Day celebrations, IDW September releases, Brannon Braga's new Borg comic Hive, Star Trek Online's no-win scenario, plus movie news and rumors. Then in the feature, we're joined by Michael Fisher and Dork Trek's Ben McCormick to discuss Eric Soong and the Enterprise three-parter, Borderland, Cold Station 12, and The Augments. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm doing fantastic, even though my Giants just lost a series to the home Mariners this weekend. I'm very depressed about that, but I'm very happy to be here on The Ready Room to talk about Star Trek. So I guess instead of, I shouldn't be talking about the Giants, I should be talking about the London Kings. Is that correct?
Yes, you could talk about them or the very popular minor league team from Brandon, Missouri, the Brannon Bragas.
I hear they're good this year.
They are quite
very
good.
Very weird, but
they do weird things during the game, that's for sure. They're known as the weird shit team by many. And oh, well, Greg, what's going on with you now? You have no beard and you're into baseball. I mean, you used to not be into sports and used to have the beard, and I just don't know who you are anymore.
It's a whole new Greg, you know. Sometimes you got to reinvent yourself. You never know, in another year I might have dreadlocks and be listening to reggae music and watching Farscape, for all you know.
It could be. You know, I had a little bit of a shock when I logged into our meeting today. As we've talked about before, you always pick a nickname for your screen name. And today you picked Greg Orion Slaver Harbin. But at first I thought it said Greg Orion Slave Girl Harbin.
That's a different podcast I do under a different name.
Oh, okay. I'll go search iTunes for that. Or does Apple not allow that one into the store?
No, that one's only found on Stitcher Radio.
Okay. All right. Well, Greg, why don't we jump into news and go ahead and get people into some real Star Trek stuff here this week. And looks like we've had a little more ranting and raving going on. And what's the deal with this first story right here?
What is the deal with Malcolm McDowell? Yeah, usually it's somebody who was with a series for like 7 years and he felt locked into his contract and felt like he never got promoted from being an ensign. And then you start complaining at the conventions about your time on Star Trek. But no, Malcolm McDowell really, he went hard on pretty much everyone's two favorite captains, Kirk and Picard.
Yeah, you know, I've heard him say some of these things before. About, I guess, I don't know if I was reading something or I was watching some kind of interview, and he was talking about how, I guess at first he was concerned about being the guy who killed Kirk, and then maybe later he felt like, well, no, it's a good thing Kirk needed to go. But here, apparently, he just went off on how he did everyone a favor. And he says that if you enjoy watching Patrick Stewart, quote, spouting off for 40 minutes, you might as well go, quote, watch paint dry.
Well, this is something we were actually talking about. You noticed this week, that I kept complaining, what was I doing? I was looking for ways to write Picard off the show.
Well, you were watching Gambit, and you said, you know, Gambit would have been a great opportunity for them to write Picard off the show. And so I reminded you that I've noticed a pattern that you're often looking for ways to write Picard off the show for some reason. And
at the middle point of Best of Both Worlds, I bought a I can't show it to you because it's actually holding my microphone up, but I bought this Star Trek novel series, and one of the stories in it features, you know, the middle of Best of Both Worlds, Riker just killing Picard. And I was like, yes! I mean, not that I'm happy Picard's dead, but I really want to see this avenue explored, because I really want to see what the show would be like with just Riker at the helm. And yeah, I don't know. You know, sometimes Picard does sort of lower the stakes of what's going on. He usually steps in before anyone can start shooting guns at each other and says, look, we are evolved. We don't have to do this. We can come to terms with each other. You know, if Kirk had been down on that planet with the guy in Darmok, there would have just been fisticuffs. I mean, good old-fashioned fisticuffs. None of this metaphor BS.
And if Riker had been down there, he would have asked, did you bring any women with you, Darmok?
Exactly.
Jane on the beach at sunset.
Darmok and Mrs. Darmok. Right. I don't know.
Well, I have a feeling if the show had gone on with only Riker at the helm, it would have been syndicated on the Playboy Channel.
That's probably true.
But anyway, obviously you, and I've heard some other people say this too, would like to explore the next generation with Riker at the helm, or a few people even want to see Dr. Crusher at the helm all the time, or even Troy. Now, you didn't like my suggestion of Reg being at the helm, though.
That would be, you know, warp factor, warp fat five, warp fat, make it so. I don't feel like that would work out too well.
I don't think so. Yeah. So anyway, Malcolm McDowell going off on Star Trek and, talking about mindless crap like the Avengers, and I don't know what's going on with him.
You know, I should really ask Lieutenant Commander Ben McCormick, you know, if he has some good conversations with Malcolm McDowell at their weekly Wet Blankets Anonymous class.
So they're both in WBA together, huh? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, they've accepted they have a problem. They're not quite ready to move on, but they're getting there.
All right. Well, I knew Harry was in there. You know, Harry Kim, who at least that's what Tom Paris tells me. But anyway, so this is going on with Malcolm McDowell. If you want to hear him rant and rave, you can go over to treknews.net. I know they have the video, and you can see him going off on our favorite show of Star Trek. Now, Greg, let me ask you this. You just expressed your undying love for Captain Picard and Patrick Stewart. And so I must ask you now, this weekend on Saturday, actually June 16th, was Captain Picard Day. And I think maybe we talked about this last year, now that I think about it. And it's already been a whole year once again. How did you celebrate Captain Picard Day? Did you recreate your favorite episodes sans Picard, or what did you do?
Well, that's exactly what I did. I recreated all of the parts of episodes that don't have Picard in them. You know, Picard's gone off the ship. They think Picard's dead. I don't dislike Picard. I loved it anyway. No, Captain Picard Day. And this is not one of the more well-known. I mean, the main Star Trek holiday, right, is First Contact Day. That's comes right. from the film First Contact, not the show. Space right. Lilith Day is a completely other completely other thing. But this comes from the show itself as well, right? That they figured out from the star date, from the episode Pegasus, which day actually the galaxy is celebrating the wonders of Captain Picard.
Yeah, apparently the whole galaxy is doing this. it was Stardate 47457.1. And that is June 16th of 2370. And that's Captain Picard Day. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, every year, as I've told you before, I make a giant bust of Captain Picard out of mashed potatoes to celebrate Captain Picard Day. It's what I do every year. And that's pretty much about it. I mean, I draw some pictures of Captain Picard, but I put them on the refrigerator. If people come over, I tell them my kids did it.
Yes, that's probably because of the crayons and stuff.
You know, I don't like to advertise that so much. But But it's an exciting day. So I, you know what I would like to hear, Greg, is I would like for our listeners to send us a message and let us know how they celebrate Captain Picard Day. And if they've written a song about Captain Picard in honor of the day, I'd like them to send us an audio file of that song and maybe we can play it on the show.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I'd love to hear, you know, did you have a parade? Did you make a bust that you, you know, of mashed potatoes? You know, did you make a song? Did you make a movie? Did you make a one-act play? Whatever you did to celebrate Captain Picard Day, I'm sure the possibilities are endless.
Did you shave your head? Let us know. Go to trek.fm/contact and send us a message and let us know. All right, Greg. Well, enough about Captain Picard. Why don't we move on to the next story here, which apparently IDW has decided that September would be the best month for them to just basically dump all of the Star Trek content that they have on hand onto the public because they have a massive amount of Star Trek stuff coming out in September.
Yeah, I mean, they keep expanding what they're doing with Star Trek. At first, it was just this Star Trek ongoing comic that started sometime late last year. But they keep adding titles. And I guess we're ramping up towards holiday. So it makes a lot of sense. But we've got a bunch of things coming out. Let's see. The first one is the next issue of the ongoing comic. It's called A Red Shirt's Tale. Now, is this about Maress?
I don't know about that. But yeah, The Red Shirt's Tale.
I think that's T-A-L-E.
Yes.
In case any of our listeners are confused. Was Maress, was she command or security, however the case may be in the,
I guess she was
in the animated series?
She wore red, yeah, so.
Okay,
She was communications officer. She was Uhura's relief officer, if I remember correctly.
So this is the story that's coming after the original Tribble story. So we're getting two original ongoing stories in a row.
Yeah, imagine that. So
it's crazy.
Well, we're getting, yeah, that's right. We're getting Archons right now, then Tribbles, and then the Red Shirt's Tale. So I don't know what this will be. Maybe it is a reenactment of Jonathan Coulton's Red Shirt song in comic form.
It's very possible.
It's quite possible, but it is coming, so you can watch for that. That would be they only talk about number 13 in September. I would assume that number 14 would be the second part of The Red Shirt's Tale in October. So that's coming out. But there's more stuff coming out. Now, Greg, they're gathering the Romulan's Treasury Edition, which I guess it's like Disney. Maybe they take all their Romulan material and put it in a vault. And then every 10 years, you can get your hands on it. I don't know. Maybe the cloaking device is in there as well. Maybe you have to make your ears pointy and sleep with the Romulan commander, the female Romulan commander, as Kirk did, to get your hands on not only the cloaking device, but also the IDW Star Trek Romulan's Treasury Edition.
And Kristen, now I've done a bit of research, and I'm trying to figure out if this Romulan's collection is brand new stories or if it's a compilation of old stuff. And honestly, I haven't really been able to figure it out. Some things I read make me think one way, and some things I read let me think the other way. So please, if you know for sure, don't just tell your friends how stupid we are. Just send us an at reply. Let us know whether it's new stories or not, because I am quite curious.
Well, if we're wrong about it, we'll just blame it on all the Romulan ale that we've been drinking before the show.
Exactly.
Yeah, it says that it compiles three TOS stories, which makes me think these are older stories and they're just doing a compilation. But it could be that he wrote three stories and they're going to throw them all into one book.
Yeah.
And they're new, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's coming out. It's going to be 72 pages and it's going to sell for $9.99. And then, Greg, moving to the next thing here. Now, this is interesting. Brannon Braga is going to be heading up a new Borg series called Hive. I guess Hive is the name of the actual series. I know it's the name of the first book that's coming out from IDW. It's a four-part miniseries, I guess.
And I guess it takes place after Nemesis? Would that be my understanding?
It takes place in the distant future in which the Borg and their king, Locutus, have assimilated the whole galaxy.
Is this true? I apparently had not read that far.
Yeah.
Wow. Locutus, their king. Okay, so then it's a time travel story. Basically, the Locutus probe came, and yes. They now have to go back into the past to get Captain Picard
exactly.
to get him to save. Ah, interesting. So,
right.
So yeah.
Because when they okay. rescued Picard, and he did not actually become Locutus, it altered the timeline. And so, yes, you're right.
Right.
The probe came back, and it came back, and it makes sounds like, make it so. Make it so. Make it so. Make it so.
It's like boiling the oceans, but then they slow it down, and it turns out it's just saying make it so over
right.
and over again.
Yeah. It was actually pretty easy for them to figure it out when they ran it through the translator, what was going on.
So Chris, what do you think of the idea of Brandon Braga coming back to do a 4-part miniseries featuring the Borg? This is TNG, you know, this is an alternate world, this is TNG world. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't have any problem with Brandon Braga coming back and doing a series about the Borg. I find sometimes we talk about we have problems at times with the novels and how they kind of go in directions that make no sense.
Right.
Is what you do. I think the idea that in the future that Locutus would be the Borg king is ridiculous, personally.
Yeah, a little bit.
I've also read a few people are saying that they don't like the idea of this either, because in the novels, the Borg have essentially been eliminated. So they're like no Borg
right.
around. And
that's the way the novels have treated it. I don't know if I completely agree with that, but that's where we're at least the pseudo canon.
Yeah. I don't really agree with that either, but that's what's been developed, through the novels.
Yeah.
And so then for them to come back in and say, oh no, not only are there still Borg in the future, but they've assimilated the entire galaxy.
Yeah.
And Locutus. He was on the Dukes of Hazzard, wasn't he? Wasn't he the guy that fixed the cars?
I think you're right.
No, that was Locutor. Locutus is their king is really weird, but we'll see what it's like. Did you notice the cover art? I knew Brandon Braga was probably involved in this because did you see the picture of Seven of Nine on the cover?
Yes. Well,
she came off a Playboy or something.
I know. This was my question. So Chris, in the inevitable Seven of Nine love scene, do you think it will be with Picard or Locutus? Or both? Whatever. What do you think?
Well, I think picking up on the best of both worlds, it would probably be both. So
that would be the best of both worlds.
It's how you tie it all in. You bring it back full circle to the series that way. And then she'll make a comment like, I knew you were both always there.
All right. So what else is coming? Oh, yes. This is our favorite. Is the other thing coming out is it's issue 5 of the Star Trek The Next Generation Doctor Who Assimilation 2, because Brandon Braga is not going to be upstaged, or that he is going to be upstaged. I don't know. Someone is going to be upstaged because there's two Borg storylines going on in the comics right now.
Right. Yes. I don't know what to say about this one, Chris.
Our listeners can't see Chris just shaking his head. Chris, I don't think you've had a chance to read Doctor Who Next Generation Assimilation 2 yet.
Okay. Yeah, to be honest, I've neither had the chance nor the inclination to read the Next Generation Doctor Who crossover series.
I read the first one, and I'm actually very similar to after I left Prometheus this weekend. I was just very confused. I don't know, one raised eyebrow, maybe shaking my head a little bit. It was cool to see the Next Generation crew there. It's kind of cool to see the Doctor, and I'm not really into Doctor Who, but it's kind of cool to see that stuff. But I don't know. I think the Borg teaming up with the Cybermen may be the worst idea since Lore teaming up with the Borg.
Oh, gosh. Let's not talk about that. Now, we exchanged a bunch of iMessages about Descent last week as well, which we'll have to get to at some point. For a feature.
Well, which I remembered as a much, much better pair of episodes than it ended up being.
Yeah, I've since the day it aired, I have found it to be a bizarre twist that they
okay.
they took there. But anyway, I know, you know, obviously I love Star Trek. I like Doctor Who as well. I like the X-Men, but the idea of mixing them together just, you know, it doesn't excite me really. I would rather see IDW spend more time on new original stories mm-hmm. about the different series. Do a DS9 series, yeah. do a Voyager series.
Well, this is where we were talking iMessage. We got Brandon Braga doing a TNG series. And I heard that, you know, Garrett Wong will be doing a Voyager series in which in the distant future, he's actually captain
yes.
of Voyager, even though he's still an ensign. He couldn't get that promotion past IDW, but by God, he's going to be the captain.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be there. And then I heard that Travis Mayweather is going to be doing an Enterprise series in which
yes.
he's the center of attention in every story.
Right. Yes, even though he has no idea what's going on, he just shows up for a shift. But he's, you know, focused, laser focus on Travis.
You know, I noticed in the three-part Augment series, which we're going to do mm-hmm. in the feature today, that they threw Travis a few lines, at least at the beginning of Borderland. And then I don't think he had
yeah,
much
they were
to
trying.
Do through the rest of the story, but they tried. Yeah. They're like, you know, Travis hasn't talked the past few episodes. Let's give him a few lines.
Maybe we should give him a line.
Yeah.
All right. So if you can't get enough of Doctor Who Next Gen, they're also coming out with the first volume. It's Star Trek Next Generation Doctor Who Assimilation 2 Volume 1, which is going to compile the first four episodes in a nice dead tree format. So you can give them to all your family and friends and or enemies for Christmas this year.
Right. And that's known by the simple designation of A21. So if you want to go into your comic shop and ask for A21,
there you go.
I'm sure they'll know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm sure they will.
All right. But in all seriousness, the IDW comics are fun.
Yeah.
Greg and I do read them. At least the ones that are focused on Star Trek exclusively, I read those. Mm-hmm. And so check them out. There's, of course, a lot of stuff coming before then. Second part of Return of the Archons will be coming out in July. We have August and September. We have a Tribble story coming out in the ongoing mm-hmm. before we get to the Red Shirt's Tale. So IDW is keeping us busy. And also, Greg, I'm sure you've noticed as well. I don't think I mentioned this on here yet. They recently updated the iOS app for the IDW comics to support HD
yes.
comics. And the comics already looked great to start with, even on the new iPad, but they continue to improve the app as well. So
yeah,
really nice.
Especially when you zoom in now, when you can actually do the zoomed in on a panel mode on the iPad 3. Whereas before, if you did that, it did become horribly pixelated. So
yeah, well, it wasn't horrible, but it was obviously not high enough resolution for
it was not up to my standards, Chris, and that's pretty much all that matters.
All right. Well, cinema letter. All right. So let's see, Greg, quickly here, a little bit of news from Star Trek Online. Now, I have to say that when this story came out, it prompted us to get new nicknames for ourselves because
yes.
I read this and I sent you a message and I said, Greg, I just read the following sentence. Star Trek Online lead content designer Scott Goat Shark Shukoff shares details about the upcoming no-win scenario event. And then I asked you, do we also need to have unexpected hybrid animal nicknames of our own? And you came up with some for us.
Well, I guess you didn't realize we already had them. I didn't come up with these just because of Scott Goakshark Shukoff. I already actually these were real. So anyway, you are Chris Zebrahawk Jones.
That's right. Yeah.
And I am Greg Flea Velociraptor Harbin.
Right, which sounds very frightening. It sounds like extreme danger in a small package.
Well, yes. I mean they're very small but very furious.
Yes. And when you see a whole, are they, do they travel in a flock? Is it a flock of flea velociraptors?
It's like an avalanche. They sort of are stumbling over another. You see the grouping of them more than you see each individual flea velociraptor. It's when they really get up on you and start, you know, clawing at your eyes that you can really see each individual one.
I see. All right. Well, it sounds quite frightening.
Very frightening.
I think I'll steer clear of those if I ever encounter them. But anyway,
what did the goat shark have to say?
The goat shark is introducing a new event to Star Trek Online that's based basically on a Kobayashi Maru scenario, the no-win scenario, in which if you are a captain, you will be challenged by wave after wave of enemy attacks as part of the holodeck training program. And it says that a random enemy will test your crew to see, you know, how they will react to different situations. And you can work your way through, and there are going to be 10 waves, as I understand it. You need to protect a defenseless transport, I guess. If I understand correctly, in each wave, that's your mission, but the challenge to you would be different. And it's designed for groups of 5 players, I believe, and you can play at any time, but they're going to have special events on certain days and certain times where you can receive additional awards if you play this event. And you'll just have to watch Star Trek Online and the calendar for when those will take place, because I haven't seen any hard dates yet.
But I see.
You need to be a vice admiral or a lieutenant general if you are in the Klingon Defense Force to participate in this game.
So I guess my main question, the main thing that pops into my mind, the main thing I'm worried about, where exactly is the young, hot, green alien game designer that I have to sleep with in order to hack the no-win scenario and come off of this scot-free?
I think you need to go to the PVE queue and send out a message in order to find
her. There we go.
You might want to use the private queue for that, though.
There we go. All right.
But I do believe that maybe that is an Easter egg in the game, possibly.
How could it not be? How could it not be built into the game?
Yeah. I was playing, was it God of War Chains of Olympus or something on the PSP a few years ago. I played all the way through the game, and there's this one area where you have to go onto this ship and you have to fight your way off the ship. And I fought my way off the ship and I went on with the game and everything was fine. And I gave the game to my friend Isaac, who does all the illustration work on Trek FM, and he played through it and he said, wow, that was an interesting part of that game on the ship. And so what are you talking about? He said, you didn't tell me that you had to sleep with these women on the ship. I said, what are you talking about? Apparently there was a part in this game that you could, if you did a certain move inside this cabin on the
branching.
Ship. Yeah, there was actually a scene where you had, so maybe in here you're going to have like the same thing. I don't know. It could come up.
That's what happens basically after... After Picard dies, after Best of Both Worlds Part 1, and Riker becomes the captain, you realize how every problem facing the Enterprise between seasons 4 and 7 could be solved instead of having discussion, but instead just Riker sleeping with someone.
Well, that's why he's on the ship, you know?
Yes.
He's not on the flagship by chance. I mean, Starfleet knew what they were doing.
He usually gets shot down in the staff meetings. The staff meeting, you know, Picard saying, you know, does anyone have ideas? And Geordi says, well, Captain, we could hook the transinducer module on the deflector dish into the hyper analyzation matrix. And then Troy says, I don't know. I felt like maybe they were being a little bit dishonest. And then, you know, Barclay says, Captain, I just, and then Riker, you know, Riker says, Captain, I'm going to sleep with them. All of them. And then Picard goes with Geordi's idea again, every time. Geordi's idea.
Yeah. I like all the cutscenes where Riker says that. And then in first season DS9 style, the camera lingers on his face for a moment.
Yes.
And then they go to commercial.
Yes.
Every commercial break.
Every commercial break is lingering on someone's face.
Oh, gosh. All right. But yeah, you know, Starfleet, they studied the records of Kirk's mission. They said, you know, more often than not, getting out of tight situations required sleeping with some alien. So I think we should send William Riker to be Picard's first officer, because Picard's not going to do it. Geordi will fumble it. And and Reg is too shy, so...
Well, you've heard of First Contact, and you've heard of the Prime Directive, but have you heard of the First Contact Directive?
Did Riker write this into the Federation Constitution?
He may have.
He may have. All right. Well, if you're an STO player, if you remember, we were actually talking about an STO event right here.
We were.
At some point during this discussion, we're talking about Star Trek Online. Go over to, if you go to StarTrek.com or go to StarTrekOnline.com dev blog, you can find the blog post for this, and we'll have a link in the show notes. Or just go in the game and you'll find out information, and you can use the PVEQ to participate.
Well, so Chris, we wanted to talk this week again about our sponsor, GiftTrek.net, who is helping us bring the Ready Room, you know, from our Starship into your room.
That's right, because it takes a while to actually transmit it from our Starship bridge here. Especially distracting over in the corner sitting at communications is your Empress Hoshi figure that you have completed now, I believe. So it's...
Yes, it's and you can thank GiftTrek.net for my Empress Hoshi statue reaching completion, and I'm going to start on a whole other set of other empresses that we'll need to talk about on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
But GiftTrek.net, so they're a fantastic website, basically, where you can go and find different Trek merchandise. I'm looking right now where they have a Bajoran talking comm badge. I didn't even know this was a product, but they have it for sale, and I really want one.
Yeah, it's amazing. I didn't know that was a product either. Now, I did used to have a Bajoran comm badge back in the 90s, but it was just made of brass, and it didn't speak. Now, does this have angry Kira voice? Like, you're throwing it all away. Does it say that when you tap it? Don't ask me.
I hope it does. I might have to order it just to find out what phrases Kira says.
Perhaps you tap it and it says, I guess you want The Office.
Exactly.
All right. But yeah, that's one of the nice, without the voiceover, of course. That's our own little invention there, but you can get that at gifttrek.net. Yes. Also, we're talking about Enterprise today, and I was looking through the t-shirt section. And if you're an Enterprise fan, GiftTrek.net has a wide selection of Enterprise t-shirts covering all of your characters, including, I believe, Mayweather. He may only be in the group photo, but he's in there. And you can also get your Enterprise NX-01 shirt.
Very cool. And as I see here, a Deanna Troi photo magnet. You might say it has a magnetic personality.
Okay. So you're responsible for Data's jokes and Generations, and it all makes sense now.
I am, yes. I did a page one rewrite, basically, just inserting a bunch of really terrible jokes into that script. I do apologize.
All right. But those are a few of the items that you can find over at GiftTrek.net. So we do appreciate their support. Thank them for helping us bring the show to you. So support the Ready Room, support GiftTrek.net, and a very devoted Star Trek fan in Michael, who runs the shop there. And head over, and you can use code TrekFM10 when you check out to get 10% off your purchase. And again, that's GiftTrek.net, N-E-T, not .com. That's some other place who we don't know. They may be from an alternate universe, but go over to GiftTrek.net, and we thank them for their support.
Well, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had one long horn and one big eye. I commenced to shaking and I said, ooh-wee, it looks like a purple people eater to me. It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater sure looks strange to me.
All right, Greg. Well, as we move into movie news and rumors, according to Kurtzman, Cumberbatch's villain is very scary. And so I'm kind of expecting, the first thing I thought of was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
That's possible.
Would that be scary to you? I don't know.
I would be terrified. Yeah, I mean, the only other thing would be... you know, maybe the werewolf bar mitzvah from 30 Rock. That's the other thing I can think of. Spooky, scary. Boys becoming men. Men becoming wolves.
I saw that the other day, actually.
So I don't know. Yeah. Perhaps it's Khan. Perhaps it's a Khan werewolf. Perhaps it is a one-eyed purple something. I lost track of the lyrics to the song.
Well, in an interview with Cinema Blend, I believe it was, Alex Kurtzman was talking about Cumberbatch, and he said that the character that Cumberbatch is playing, in parentheses, of my own Khan, he did not say Khan, but
no.
He says that the villain has an incredibly formidable presence, and he's amazing. And are you going to be scared of him? Shit, yeah. Those are Kurtzman's words. So,
all right.
Which is the reason why I thought it was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Because if I saw that coming at me, I would be, yeah.
Very scared. Can you think of, I'm trying to think of scary Star Trek villains to date. Perhaps the Borg Queen. She was sort of, she was scary in some ways.
She was, yeah, creepy anyway.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Scary. Can you think of any off the top of your head? I mean, there were obviously for me, my nightmares of the aliens with the scissors and the clicking in the dark.
Oh yeah. Those guys, they were
creeped
scary.
The hell out of me.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say they were scary.
I think typically though, when Star Trek tries for scary, you end up with night terrors. and I don't mean the audience ends up with night terrors. I mean, the writing staff ends up writing night terrors.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. There aren't too many like truly scary villains that I can think of in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There's some, I would think the original Borg concept, you know, of this kind of like mindless hive of zombies is kind of scary.
But this is supposed to be a more subtle villain, right? Isn't that what we learned last week?
Yeah. He's subtled and nuanced. Yet he's
subtle,
formidable,
nuanced, scary,
and scary.
And formidable and scary. Okay.
Also, he's brilliant. Don't forget that part as well.
Don't forget brilliant. So I'm yeah. So I've got my adjective. I've got my Star Trek II villain adjective whiteboard, and I've got brilliant, scary, subtle, nuanced. Brilliant's on there a few times actually. Yeah. And I don't know what this adds up to.
Don't forget bad, as in a bad guy.
He's
a bad guy. He's evil.
That is the one thing they're willing to say about him, that he's playing a bad guy.
That's right. They won't necessarily always admit that he's the villain, but he is a bad guy.
Right. All right.
So I feel like these guys are all going to like run for political office after this movie comes out or something. The way
it's
they catch
possible.
Everything they say. So I have no idea what this means, but I just wanted to throw it out there that we have yet another adjective to throw onto our whiteboard as we diagram the possible directions of Cumberbatch as Khan.
Yes.
All right. So also coming out here, also from Kurtzman, a little bit of the reasoning behind why we've had to wait 4 years for a movie to come out.
Yes, and I thought, speaking of delicate and nuanced, the quote from Kurtzman, I just want to read it verbatim. Here's the thing about Trek. Part of why we delayed a year was because we didn't want to rush it, just because we felt very beholden to the franchise and we feel very protective of it, and the worst thing we could do is put it out there before we felt like we were ready and we were still working on the story. Oof, that's a run-on sentence, Mr. Kurtzman. Basically, what he's saying is there was no way they were going to get it done in 2012.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's just, we couldn't do it. But, you know, in hindsight, here's a reason why. Here's an excuse as to why we couldn't do it. I mean, come on, you're beholden to the franchise. You're rebooting the franchise, for one thing. When I saw the headline, my first thought was, okay, well, they felt that they went to the well too many times.
Right.
And, you know, and then with what happened to Enterprise, you know, and the allegations of franchise fatigue, like we need to have more, we need to rest it longer. And then my next thought was, well, 4 years is like, too long to rest it, because then you start to actually lose people. But then it turns out that it's nothing like that at all. It's more like, yeah, we were busy making Super 8 and things like that. And yeah.
And writing Transformers 3. Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm all for giving them time. I mean, probably, you know, they had a couple scripts. If they'd rushed it, you would have ended up, you know, meeting Geordi's mom or something terrible. So they've got to give it time to percolate and figure out what they're going to do with the movie. I understand that, but I mean, be honest about it. I mean, they had other projects. There were other things going on. Star Trek got put on the back burner for a year or two, and then they started focusing on it and actually got it done.
That's the reality, yeah. Now, I also agree. I'm all in favor of giving them time, because I want to have good movies that I can go back and watch, you know, for years and years to come. I don't want to have some crummy movie come out just because people want to have a movie every 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want them to end up, you know, meeting space pirates. I'm sorry, I've been watching season 7. They ran out of ideas. What happened?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, as we talked about in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
I don't know if we mentioned this earlier news or not, but look forward later this year to the release of the Space Pirates Fan Collective box set. Yes. Greg is going to be the curator of this. And Greg, I think you already have some cover art planned, don't you?
Yeah, I do, actually. Well, inside will be Gambit, as well as these are the Voyages, as well as actually the Augments arc that we're getting to. And then on the cover, yes, will be the bust of Gene Roddenberry as seen in the writer's room with a blindfold covering his eyes.
So watch for that coming on DVD and Blu-ray.
Yes.
To a store near you eventually. But yeah, I mean, the reality here is that if they had started writing a new movie after 2009 was released, as they used to do with Star Trek movies,
right,
they would have released the movie that they're releasing in 2013 in 2012 or 2011.
And this is what happens when we get people who aren't, you know, day-to-day focused on the franchise. We don't have a Rick Berman. It's not like Rick Berman wasn't running around, you know, shooting 4 pilots a year and writing a feature script and, you know, writing Ridley Scott's new movie. He wasn't doing that. He was laser focused on Star Trek, and for good or for ill, but that's what we're used to, and that's gone away. You know, it's more like Nicholas Meyer, who made Star Trek 2 and then sort of had a supervisory role and then came back for Star Trek 6, but he was doing other stuff too. He wasn't laser focused on Star Trek, because when you're doing the movies, you can't do that. I mean, you'd get really burned out if you went right from doing a feature into doing another feature for the next, you know, 3 years of your life.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what it all boils down to here is that what the fans want is they want another TV series. They want to see new Star Trek on a regular basis. I think that's where the impatience comes from primarily, because we all want a good movie. Yeah. And I don't think we would mind so much if it were 4 years between movies if we had new Trek on television.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. All right. Well, two last quick items here before we move on to the feature. It's been confirmed, as we pretty much already knew, that Space Movie 2013 will be released in IMAX 3D.
This isn't just fake IMAX blown up for the big screen like they did with Star Trek 2009. They actually filmed certain sequences in IMAX and then converted it to 3D. So I'm really excited to see that. I mean, I don't know, you know, what happens when you shine a flashlight into an IMAX camera?
I don't know, but I hope that the Spock Uhura hug scenes are some of those that were done in 3D.
Yes.
Because I don't really want to see those converted. You know, I want to see the real.
Oh, sure. Yes.
The real thing there. It's very important. And the other item is the panel that everyone is hoping will occur at San Diego Comic-Con, and which I think Roberto Orsi had hinted, at least for a while, that he would like to do, is probably not going to happen at this point.
It sounds like they just don't have anything ready to show or really ready to say. I mean, what do? You have Benedict Cumberbatch come out to great applause, and then he sits down on the panel, and there's his name tag, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch, brilliant, nuanced, scary bad guy from Star Trek 2013. Ah, that's that's not going to make anybody happy. So,
yeah, probably not. But apparently Paramount's not the only studio that's skipping out on some of these things. It looks like pretty much all the big guys, 20th Century Fox, DreamWorks, Relativity, are not going to be doing these big panels, according to Variety. So,
yeah, which is surprising. I don't know. Maybe they're, I mean, it's possible they're feeling like the internet is doing a good enough job of doing this sort of viral promotion. And it is sort of weird at the end of summer to start promoting next year's big movies.
Yeah.
It's a bit early, you know, you don't want to, you know, be shooting your wad that early. You want to hold off. Shooting your wad, by the way, has to do with muskets and nothing else. It's a rifle metaphor.
The eugenics wars are one of the most famous parts of Star Trek history, and it's one that we've never really learned a whole lot about other than Khan's involvement through Space Seed and The Wrath of Khan. Finally, in the fourth season of Enterprise, as the show finally became a prequel to the Star Trek universe we know, they revisited the eugenics wars with a three-parter, Borderland, Cold Station 12, and The Augments. And today we're going to talk about this arc known as the Soong's Augments arc. And to help us do that, we have friend of the show, Michael Fisher. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Chris. Great to be here.
And we also have from Dork Trek, everyone's favorite Lieutenant Commander, Ben McCormick. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, our pleasure. Great to have both you guys
welcome
us today. Should be a fun discussion. All right. Ben, before we start the discussion on the Augments arc here, I did want to run by you one thing from news today. I wanted to read this quote to you from Alex Kurtzman and get your thoughts on this. He said, "Here's the thing about Trek. Part of why we delayed a year with the next movie is because we didn't want to rush it. Just because we feel very beholden to the franchise and we feel very protective of it. And the worst thing we can do is to put it out there before we felt like we were ready and we were still working on the story." Now, do you accept this? I know you've been waiting, and 4 years, it's almost killing you until this next movie comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Space Movie
just
2013.
Anticipating. And, yes.
Yes.
The Space Movie 2013, the sequel to Space Movie 2009.
That's right.
Will probably be yet another one of my favorites. And they're torturing me, though, because Cumberbatch, who plays Sherlock on the BBC, I love Sherlock. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they bring him in. It's just like, hey, taunt Ben. This is great. Let's get one of his favorite actors and make him the villain.
They're going to force you to accept it, Ben. They're just going to shove it right down your throat.
And then I've already predicted, though, who he's playing, because we know it's not going to be playing Khan, but because that would just be too obvious. There's too many, you know, rumors out there, whatnot. But my theory, and I've said this months ago before they even cast him, Harcourt Fenton Mudd, Harry Mudd.
Oh, yeah.
He is the big bad, because they've I'm trying to not go Dork Trek with my language, but they've massaged the history so much that in this, Harry Mudd will be an actual viable bad guy and just be the ultimate Khan-like figure, where Khan will be some joke, comical thing in the third movie that they address.
Probably so, yeah. Or it could be, as Greg had predicted, it is one of the Mudd brothers, but it's actually Henry Mudd who's the bad one. So who's the bad seed of the Mudd family?
I'm expecting in the third movie it will be Khan, but since, you know, they want to keep it more authentic now, they're going to get an Indian actor with the whole stereotypical, you know, 7-Eleven type accent.
Really?
You're going to get Fisher Stevens from Short Circuit is what you're saying?
Exactly. that type of accent through the whole, and you know, oh yes, God, I know him. You know, and it's just, no, guys.
Fire everything, come again.
Okay. No, we need the shields.
I thought they were going to get Dr. Sanjay Gupta to make his a big screen premiere.
That'd be good.
Dr. Khan Noonien scene in the third in Space Movie 2018. And when it comes out, yes.
2018, yes.
We have to space these out every 4 to 5 years.
It's good to talk about this because Khan ties into the eugenics wars, which ties into our feature discussion today, which is the eugenics wars and Enterprise's treatment of this. And I was glad to see them go in this kind of new direction, picking up something from Star Trek history, tying things back to the original series and the movies, and making kind of a more epic story here. The three-part arc was kind of a new approach.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we just had the whole season-long Zindi arc, which for me, as I don't know about you guys, but as a viewer in, what was it, 2004? I had abandoned the show. I was done. No more Enterprise. I don't know if I was done with Star Trek, but I wasn't going to watch Enterprise. But when I heard Brent Spiner was going to be on the show and they were doing augments, I'm all for it. So, I did. I tuned back in. I started watching again. I think I watched the rest of the season.
So you were one of the audience members for whom that tactic worked, if it was a tactic.
Exactly.
Right. It was a tactic. Don't you remember the TV spot that UPN ran? Come for the Spiner, stay for the voyage. So that worked on you, Greg.
It did. It's exactly what I needed. And I mean, sure, you talk about stunt casting, but who better to be a stunt cast than Brent Spiner, who has played, I don't know, he's played more characters than I can think of. I mean, maybe Tim Russ has played more characters. I know, but my theory about Tim Russ is it's always Tuvok. He's in a human disguise on the Enterprise B. Yeah. He's in a human disguise again on the Enterprise D. And then he puts on a Klingon disguise to show up on DS9.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure that Tim Russ is the only Star Trek actor to do a barrel roll in more than one series. He did a barrel roll in Starship
Nine.
As I
was
saying,
right? Yes. He did, I believe.
Yes. As well as on Voyager. So he got TNG and Voyager in.
Right.
Die Hard in Space.
That's right.
Okay, but Brent Spiner. So I don't have to retread, but he was Dr. Sung on TNG. He was Lore. He was, of course, Data. He was B4. And now he's... Do we have a name for him?
Yes.
Arik Sung. Yep.
And don't forget Masks, where he played like all kinds of crazy people.
Oh, Masaka is rising.
Oh, goodness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, also, don't forget the holodeck episode, Fistful of Datas, where he basically played the entire townspeople when the computer malfunctioned.
Good call.
It's very true. There's nobody that he can't play, including a... how do I say this nicely? A person who works in a brothel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, God. I had blocked that out of my memory completely. Wow.
As well you should have. Well, but Michael, so what did you think? Were you an Enterprise viewer? Were you pulled back in by the Spiner?
No, actually, this is very interesting. I just watched this entire episode arc for the first time starting 4 hours ago. This was my first viewing. I'm serious. Because I, too, had abandoned Enterprise. I was in college, and had a very busy schedule, and Enterprise just had lost me. I mean, I was no longer committed. And I was vaguely aware that Brent Spiner was back on the show, but I just couldn't make the time. I was too busy. So seeing it now in the midst of a sort of disjointed Enterprise rewatch has really, 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 really impressed me. I loved it. John Billingsley, he called the episodes making up the Augments arc, according to Memory Alpha, some of the best work of the season. And I completely agree. I think it's some of the best work of the series, really. So I had a ball watching these.
So you'd count yourself as a fan of space pirates then?
Yes. Well, I mean, always, clearly, even though, and I have to say that even though I am kind of a little tired of Brent Spiner doing so many Brent Spiner roles on Star Trek. I know that's an unpopular thing to say. I loved him and doing all of his stuff in Next Gen, but by the time Masks rolled around, I was kind of like, okay, all right. I like that you have range, Brent Spiner, but let's maybe not see as much of that.
Yeah. Well, Ben, what about you? What was your experience with Enterprise?
Well, with me being the diehard Trekkie that I am, I was there. I hated so much of the temporal Cold War that was going on with the first three seasons, but I came back every week. Some weeks it was only because there was the new Twilight Zone series that UPN did back.
Oh,
in the,
I remember that. Yeah,
and that was like a immediately after Star Trek was Twilight Zone, so it was like, I'm gonna watch Twilight Zone, so I might as well watch Star Trek this week. I mean, and for me, that was kind of tough. But
sometimes you thought you had stepped into the Twilight Zone, right? What happened to my Star Trek?
This is not good. What, you're messing with continuity? This is one of my this series, though, was one of the first times I just had started saying that it was the timeline had been shattered. When First Contact happened, it altered reality. And that was the beginning of an alternate timeline. So when it got to this, I was very happy. I'd read all the stuff about, Manny Coto coming in, about it being less of, the off story, temporal Cold War, Sulu Bond from the future thing. That was all to be cleared up. I love the episode where Daniels is there and everything disappears around him and says, oh, it's all back to like it never happened. Yay. But you're 3 years in. It's too late. You've lost so many people. I mean, when the show first premiered, it was called Enterprise. But by this point, it had gotten, the ratings were so bad. They, initially it was, we think the show can stand on its own. It's going to be great. It's Enterprise. Now we get to this point and it's like, no, it's Star Trek Enterprise. Please come back. You remember TNG? You liked TNG. You liked DS9. Yeah. We don't talk about the Voyager thing, but you like those other two. So please come back. And it was too late. And then you bring Brent Spiner in, which I didn't come to this episode for Brent Spiner. It was all about the Big Show. I love
the famous
nothing
Star
more.
Trek and WWE tie-ins.
Because you've always wanted Big Show to lift you up in the air by your waist. And
I can think of nothing more sci-fi than professional wrestling. So when Sci-Fi Channel started showing the WWE, I was just so happy and said, it fits so well. And look, here's an episode of Star Trek that has the Big Show in it.
Well, let's not forget. I mean, Enterprise, they weren't breaking any new ground here. Voyager had The Rock on.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's like shameless UPN cross promotion. Let's cross promote our shows in a Star Trek episode.
I'm glad I didn't know Big Show was in this before I watched it, because I probably would have boycotted it. I still have not seen the Voyager episode with The Rock in it, because I just refused. I remember seeing the trailer on my 11-inch kitchen TV at 16 years old and being like, no, I'm not coming back next week, Voyager. No. You suck.
While we're talking about Big Show here, though, and the Orions, though, I was really glad to see Orions in this episode. I thought it was really cool to actually be able to see them.
Yeah.
But did you think that all these Orion guys were a little bit too jolly? I thought they were really jolly. I thought I want them to be tougher, personally.
Oh, I thought you were making a Jolly Green Giant, because they were all tall.
Me too.
And they're jolly. And they're green.
I always miss the joke.
And they, so I was waiting
and
for
fed
something
frozen
about
vegetables to their prisoners. So there you go.
Right. Exactly.
We also got to see one of them topple over the course of about 13 seconds there on film, right?
Yeah.
That was probably one of the funniest bits of the set.
Yeah.
I actually liked visiting the Orions. This is an interesting something I was going to bring up, and I guess we can mention it now. I like how the show is. I mean, it's a three-parter, but it's three distinct episodes. The first one, we are sort of in it with the Orion Syndicate. The second episode, we're sort of dealing with the past, right? And then we're also dealing with everything going on in the station.
A little bit, yeah.
And then we have to actually save Earth from the Augments themselves. And these are three pretty distinct storylines.
Yeah, well, agreed.
I felt why don't we, before we move on to that, let's talk about Spiner just a little bit more since we were already talking about him.
Yeah.
I think that, like you said, it's kind of stunt casting, like, okay, let's bring in Brent Spiner. We'll get Star Trek fans to come in, give Enterprise another chance at the same time that we are making it actually a prequel series. You know, we're in this environment where we have Orions around, we have Orion's slave girl, we in the crowd, we have Tellarites. You know, we're kind of like really bringing it back to TOS universe a bit more the craziness of the Zindi arc. But I mean, for me, I think Brent Spiner made this episode. His character and his performance was really key, because I kind of started to get a little bit tired of the Malik thing, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. So I think Brent Spiner did a phenomenal job here, and I think that he kept the character really interesting all the way through. It didn't feel like a gimmick, you know. It felt like this is really part of the history, and this is how the eugenics wars at least played out after the wars themselves happened. So I thought it was great, and Brent Spiner was really important into this episode as opposed to being a gimmick.
Yeah. And I like that they were able to talk about the eugenics wars without making it, I don't know, without making it a joke or without making it a gimmick. You know, you look at, you know, what DS9 did with the tribal thing, and where they sort of made a joke about the foreheads.
That was supposed to be fun.
But even coming into Enterprise and the Klingon forehead bit, that arc that I'm sure we'll talk about in the future was like, really, they're going to do a whole arc to explain the foreheads. But this felt so much more organic. We're just going to have characters talk about the eugenics wars and just learn a little bit more and fill in some of those gaps. You know, I went back and watched Space Seed, and it's very sporadic. They really don't explain much about it. And they definitely don't talk much about the actual augment side of it or where what happened after that. And it's really interesting to see this Sung character, somebody who understands the dangers, but thinks he can make these great scientific advances. You know, he's not evil. He's trying to actually make humanity better, not to enslave people, just because he thinks humans can be better, which is actually, if you go back and watch Space Seed, that's kind of what Khan was too. Khan, especially in Space Seed, wasn't terribly evil. He felt like he was better. He had ambition, but he wasn't going to be putting, you know, Bajorans in slave camps or anything.
Oh, no, man, I'm getting a little scared of your tone here.
No. you listen to what they were saying. You know, under Khan, there weren't, you know, mass killings, and there wasn't much freedom. He kept an iron grip on things. But the idea of Khan wasn't that he was this, as we talked about in the news, he wasn't this scary villain who's going to stab you in the middle of the night. No, he just was a very strong person who felt like he could do good things or do great things.
Yeah,
he wanted
to make the planet a very nice person.
And that's what Sung
person.
Is here. Exactly. But it's a different kind of villain. And Sung is a different kind of villain than we've really seen.
Yes.
And that's what makes him interesting. He's not a good guy who turns bad. He's a guy who just has very different motivations than any of the characters. And that's what sets him opposed to our good guys.
I think it falls into the too smart for your own good category, though, because he can't see the problem that he's causing. He's altering human DNA. He's making all these changes. Because, well, why not? And his conversation with Dr. Phlox in sickbay, where he's like, well, your people have been doing genetic engineering for centuries, you know, and you don't have a problem with it. But, you know, he just can't see the fundamental difference of correcting a birth defect versus, hey, we can see 5% more of the spectrum now. You know, no, you can't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he really needed Jeff Goldblum to come in and say, you know, you're just working on the. Should I let Michael do it?
Nature finds a way. Yes. No, I was thinking of that very thing, Greg. Yeah. No, that whole philosophical debate for like 2 minutes in Jurassic Park. It was very, very much, mirrored in this episode. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like the discussion between Sung and Phlox, where Sung's like, you know, you guys do genetic engineering all the time. Like, you have advanced the Nobulans quite past where they were, you know, 500 years ago. And Phlox basically says, yeah, but that's because we're not crazy savages like you people.
Well, even...
Okay.
Even Archer concedes that, yeah, actually, too.
Well, yeah, he does.
There's even a scene where Archer is in Phlox's quarters, I guess. Phlox is eating, wherever that is, and he says, you know, you're the Nobulans, you perfected genetic engineering long ago, and but you didn't turn out like this. And he says, well, maybe your instincts, I guess, is that what he said? Have caught up with your intellect or your technology,
yes,
or something like that. But
yeah, that's what he said.
Right. Yeah. And that's a thread that runs through Enterprise, that we weren't ready for all of this. We got warp drive way too quickly. And it's why the Vulcans were always trying to keep us down. And this isn't something that ever comes out, I feel like, in later series. I mean, you have Q sort of complaining that humans have gone too far in the galaxy and they need to slow down, but not really to the point of where it is an Enterprise, where they keep getting so many warnings that we need to be really, really careful, because we're still very warlike and we haven't reached that utopia, but yet we're trying so many things. We're trying to, you know, colonize the galaxy. Mm. It's a really interesting philosophical debate to be had. And hey, philosophical debate in Star Trek, woo.
Well, also, I mean, some of it comes across as heavy-handed and frankly a little misguided in this arc, which is one of the thematic issues I have with it, because in the same vein we have quotes like superior ability breeds superior ambition, and you know, why are you so surprised? Whenever people start believing they're better than everyone else, the results are always the same. We have these kind of like thinly veiled arguments against self-improvement, which is what Star Trek is all about. So it's like, well, I get that you're being profound here, you know, Captain Archer / the writers, but no, there's no need to take it to that extent and argue that, you know, that we shouldn't be improving.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think I like the fact in this arc that they do really delve into an issue, and an issue that's important in our time, you know, the idea of genetic manipulation. And most of the time the discussion works for me, but like you said, Michael, there are moments in these episodes where I kind of am taken aback by a few of the comments. Like, this isn't actually a discussion at this point. This is, like you said, very heavy-handed, just, and there are moments, yeah, where it is almost like saying that self-improvement is a bad thing, in general, which, yeah, is kind of creepy at moments, but yeah, it happens.
Well, the line about superior ambition, though, that was almost a direct quote from the original series.
Was that from Space Seed?
Yeah, from Space Seed, when Kirk first addresses, you know, the issue of Khan's superiority. But I mean, at the same time, I mean, Star Trek can get preachy. I mean, that's kind of its thing. But and sometimes
like you take that with the rest of it.
Exactly. I mean, and if they do a few soft episodes where they're kind of light on the preachy, then they have to break out an episode where you have guys that are black on one side of the face and white on the other side of the face and just hit you over the head with it and go, here, see.
Yeah.
All right. Right. The Vulcans who can mind meld are the gay ones. Okay. It's okay.
That, I mean, that did come out in Enterprise too, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
and it's like,
yeah,
just,
that's one thing we needed a new series to clear up for us from Star Trek history. Thanks, guys.
Okay, but I mean, that was, I don't know, the whole augment thing, though. With me living in the 23rd and 24th century for much of my life, you know, growing up, was anybody else disappointed when the 90s got here and we didn't have the eugenics wars?
Oh yeah, it was weird.
Because I you know, I remember. I mean, it was like, man, it's 1993, and we should be deep into some Khan stuff right now.
I know what you mean. I mean, I was turning on CNN every morning, and I was disappointed.
Damn, I kept wanting to see the
Eugenics Wars didn't break out today while I was asleep.
Damn. off of that the Saturn V launch pad, you know, the Photoshop and the Star Trek chronology.
Well, no, and then also though, Voyager did an episode where they went back through time to contemporary Earth, and they were in the 90s, and it's like, okay, we should be in the middle of the eugenics wars. Well, no, where's the devastation?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, why do you think Los Angeles grew to be as large as it is now? Star Trek fans were moving there because they knew that it would be protected from the eugenics wars, because we know when Voyager goes back that apparently... And I know someone will send us a letter. This has already happened before when we talked about Futures End. Someone will send us a message telling us, no, in Rain Robinson's office on the side of the filing cabinet, there's a newspaper clipping about Khan and the eugenics wars. And I still say, well, that doesn't make up for the fact that there's no other evidence anywhere that this has...
They did some hand-waving. I remember the dialogue between Janeway and Chakotay. He's like, wasn't the eugenics wars happening? And she's like, no, this area was unaffected. Anyway, let's go find some other things.
Where's Sarah Silverman?
That's what they're talking about as they're strolling along the beach. We can't hear them, but we see their hands moving. That's the whole bit about,
We can work on that,
It's a good thing that we landed in Los Angeles. So, All right.
Well, but, and this is an interesting way of doing the eugenics wars without doing the eugenics wars. I mean, they could have just in Enterprise done a time travel story, you know, go back to the alternate 1990, whatever, four or five, and actually run into Khan. I'm sure someone pitched that in the writer's room. I mean, I would have. Yeah,
that's when they put the blindfold on the bust of Gene Roddenberry, right? When they were pitching that one.
Yes, that's exactly. Right. But no, but here, you know, I think this works out pretty well to do sort of a group of, I mean, yes, it's a retread of Space Seed, but it's interesting to find a group of augments who weren't the original augments, but sort of like a lost group of them. Chris is like, does that work for you? Or are you just sitting there saying, it's Space Seed again?
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on this because there are parts of this that come off as pretty original. And then there are parts of this that are, like you said, a retread of Space Seed. And then there are parts of this, like the ending, not the very, very final scene, which was really bizarre. But the ending when Malik actually sets the auto-destruct of the Bird of Prey, that it's like ripped right out of the Wrath of Khan to the point that his face is burned.
Yeah, there's like no reason
right
he...
down to the half his face.
Right.
And he's trying to pull himself up on the control panel, and even the angle of his body and the angle of the shot, it's exactly Khan activating the Genesis device. And that, I was a little disappointed that they copied Khan, the Wrath of Khan, to that extent, because... One thing I want to get your thoughts on is the whole character of Malik, because at first it seemed interesting, but I felt as I went on that they were basically trying to retread Khan through Malik. So Malik is Khan through all this. But the big problem I have with it is that Khan, as you said, Greg, earlier, Khan was not just a psychopath. And Malik is just a psychopath. And Malik becomes very two-dimensional and uninteresting to me as it goes on, because he just wants to kill everybody and there's no motivation. You know, Khan wanted revenge against Kirk. Malik is just like, oh, it's fun to kill people. Let's put someone in a booth and give them a disease.
It's like Sung isn't evil enough and then Malik isn't like intelligent enough. Like between the two of them, maybe they make an interesting villain, but... Especially as the show starts to focus on Malik. Yeah, that's where I started getting a little bored.
Persis is like she's conflicted about what's going on. She believes that they are more advanced. But she also can see the other side. She can see her father's or Soong's side of things as well. So she's a more interesting character to me. And then Malik is just becomes... kind of tiresome by the end of Cold Station 12. But what do you guys, Michael and Ben, what do you guys think about Malik as Khan?
Well, no, I think it was, I mean, like you're saying, it was almost a caricature of Khan. I mean, it was, and I think that's a failing of the writers where, Khan was such a fleshed out character, but then we have, 20, 30 years of fan fiction and of us building this up in our minds of what Khan was, so that you try to go over the top and then he comes across as, like you said, a two-dimensional psychopath. And it kind of fell short. And it was almost, I mean, it was sad. I mean, at some points where you're just like, well, you know, you're the quasi-con. Maybe this is the reason your embryo was in deep storage, you know, and they didn't, you know, bring you guys out, because it's just, it was almost like a cardboard cutout of what the original genetic Superman. I mean, we never heard augments until, you know, Enterprise. Before this, it was always, you know, genetically engineered Superman from the 90s.
Yeah.
And, okay, well, augments are a little less than the actual genetic Superman. You know, you just kind of didn't get there.
Also easier to say. True. Yeah.
I think there might have been a lawsuit with DC.
The interaction between Soong and Malik was interesting to watch, because Brent Spiner played Soong's frustration and conflicted emotions very, very well, and it was kind of very interesting to watch. But Soong is forgiving to the point of stupidity.
Yeah, that's true.
In the sense that a lot of these kind of sympathetic villains are, and I just want to, you know, there should be a memo to all compassionate villain leaders, like, stop sending your openly defiant and unstable underlings back to their posts. Like, it seems like this always happens. It's like, this guy's clearly going to try and stab you when you're sleeping. And it's like, well, stop arguing with me. Get back to your posts. Like, no, tie him up.
If you kill your brother one more time, yeah, I exactly. swear, there will be a sternly written letter in your permanent report.
I hope you know that this will go down on your permanent record.
We are going to be reconsidering all of your contracts.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the thing that frustrated me most. Once I got used to Malik in the first place, because in the first 10 minutes of the episode, I was like, could this guy be any more cardboard and just openly aggressive and nasty, please? And then he kind of mellowed a little bit in his interaction with Persis and stuff. And
well, but, until that bizarre scene where he kills her, he stabs her in some, and then he kisses her. And that's when you're like, it's just brutal. Completely, you know, that's something Khan would not do, I don't think.
Right.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
That's an interesting scene. I didn't really necessarily see that coming, and that's very it gets up there with the exploding Remick scene as one of those scenes you don't expect from Star Trek necessarily, because not that we'd ever really grown to love Persis, but we've gotten used to her and we were kind of on her side because she let Soong free and we kind of like him at that point. And then she gets stabbed with a really kind of well done sound effect. And she plays her death really well. And he's just like, Jesus. And then that psychopath kisses her as she's dying. And it was so disturbing that I guess, what did Memory Alpha say? Like, BBC cut that scene out.
Right.
And it's like, well, I see. Why. Because that kind of hurt my heart a little bit. You know?
Well, I mean, Malik shoots their brother, too. What's his name? Smek. Just like, boom. He's dead.
But
it's like they kept having him kill the cat over and over again just to prove how evil.
But that wasn't as unexpected as when he killed Persis, though. But I would chalk that up there with, like you said, the exploding head, or also the scene where Geordi goes on a date. That was another unexpected moment from Star Trek.
Oh, my God.
The pirate shirt wearing violinist, he's actually under contract with Paramount, and they needed one more gig for him, and so they wrote it in for Geordi getting a date episode.
You have to excuse the violinist guy. I mean, you know, he was in wardrobe. They had a low talker in there. He agreed to wear the puffy shirt. He didn't know. They start the camera rolling. Geordi's like, "What the hell are you wearing? What is that?" Nice. All right. So I guess we kind of agree that Malik was at best a second rate Khan through here, which
They won't be making Star Trek Enterprise the film Revenge of Malik.
Yeah, no. That's right. And so thank goodness that Brent Spiner was in here, because like you said, Michael, I do think that the dialogue between Malik and Soong was very interesting. And Brent Spiner, did do a great job of playing the conflicted emotions of Soong. But it's very true that Soong is too forgiving. I mean, even at the very end of all of this, he still wants to try to save them. at the end. And Archer's just looking at him like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know what?
Yeah.
Some need some genetic manipulation on your brain. I don't know.
You know, something something that was interesting for me coming back into this, when I originally watched these episodes, it was, you know, when they first aired back in 04, which, you know, it had been 10 years since I'd seen TNG is like a, you know, actively watching it. Yeah. So when I saw this episode, this is the first time I'd seen Brent Spiner on Star Trek in a very long time. I mean, other than his, you know, rare appearances elsewhere. So it was, okay, here's the, you know, Enterprise crew. And oh, look, here's Brent Spiner's coming in. Now that I'm, you know, over on Dork Trek and we're watching the, you know, TNG every week, when I see this episode, it was like, oh, there's Brent Spiner and some other people, you know, where he was such, I mean, the character was, I guess, well-written, but Brent Spiner can just really take a role and run with it. And I think that may have contributed to Malik looking so bad sometimes, maybe.
Maybe.
You see, I mean, where it's just that Brent Spiner is such a good character actor for these things, where he becomes Eric Soong.
Yeah.
And he's not psycho. Even if they wrote it where, you know, Soong was the bad guy, he doesn't come across as psychotic, or he doesn't come across as, you know, evil. And I think that may have something to do with the way that Brent Spiner played it, where if maybe a better actor had been cast as Malik, or if the, you know, other augments had been, you know, more established actors, it may have come across a little less creepy psychotic.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that the writer's failure to give Malik any motivation was also responsible for him coming off so poorly. But
well, yeah. I mean, they tried with a couple little transparent things in there where Malik's like kind of making a logical argument that this is the only way the only way is to poison this planet to get the Federation off.
I know, it's like, I've wrecked my brain, but you know, I think the only way is to put pathogens in a torpedo and launch them into the atmosphere of a planet and target the southern hemisphere to ensure the maximum casualties so that the Klingons and the Federation will get into a war and then we can go off and live somewhere. It's the only way. I've like thought
it becomes this hobbyist political machinations like puppeteers. Like, yeah, no, I don't, I'm not sure it's the only way. I agree.
I just want Soong to say, it's the only way? Are you sure? I mean, it sounds like a really complicated plan. Yeah. There must be a, have you heard of, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the final episode, The Augments, is probably the weakest of the bunch. I really love the first one where we first meet Soong, and then even the second part where we go and meet who is he's like this famous character actor playing the scientist.
No, he's so I love him.
Both of those episodes are really good, and they feel like throwbacks to, I mean, it's the original series. It's when Next Gen really sort of got out of its element. I just watched Gambit from the seventh season, part one and two. And there's problems with Gambit, but it was sort of TNG getting out of its element, trying something new. Let's have our guys sort of go explore new places we haven't seen before. And so that was really fun. I mean, that's one thing I have to just say about Borderlands and Cold Station 12, especially Borderlands. They're really fun episodes. And that's something Enterprise hadn't been in a while.
Are you talking about the Dr. Lucas? Richard Riley playing?
Richard Riley, is it?
Yeah, Richard Riley. As soon as he turned around, it's like, oh, great. God, although I have to admit that the look on his face when he first turned around, I was expecting him to say, don't squeeze the Charmin. So
exactly,
I was expecting him to start freaking out about getting fired. Guys, Starfleet's downsizing. They got a consultant. I'm just working on another heart attack. You know.
All right, but exactly. I know what you mean. So, but yeah, it was. So why don't we talk about the concept then? Because it is exciting, especially compared to previous Enterprise. I mean, there are moments in the Zindi arc which are exciting, but it also doesn't feel like Star Trek because it was so far out of the element. So this is something that when Manny Koto came in fourth season, we started having more of these arcs that would span three episodes. I think in the other side of the room, Ben.
The other side of the room.
You were saying that when the Enterprise was leaving space dock, it was like and we're off to do things right this time. And then Greg said, yes, our, what did you say? Our 6-month mission to explore 5 storylines and end with the horrible finale. So, but in between, exactly. When the Enterprise leaves space dock here and we get These Are the Voyages, we do have a number of these 3-part arcs, which are really interesting. And this is one. What do you guys think about this concept of it's kind of like DS9 light in a way. It's like, let's do these long stories, but just do it 3 or 4 episodes at a time.
Well, I mean, Enterprise had a, I don't know, because of the horrible time temporal thing that was kind of an ongoing saga through, you know, just kind of underlying throughout the entire series up to now. It was nice to have, okay, we have these 3 or 4 parts that there is an overall story, like the whole Vulcan thing that kind of goes through the entire series with how the Vulcans, why the Vulcans aren't the Vulcans that we know. But I think being able to break it down into these little 3-part episodes and 3-part story arcs where you can, and even within the 3 parts, you could watch any one of the episodes of this Augment arc. And they were, you know, pretty much a standalone episode that just tied in with the others. But you wouldn't really be out too much.
That's a really good point. I was often surprised in this arc at the beginning of each episode when they do the previously on Enterprise at how short those recaps were. I mean, they were like 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. I mean, you didn't need that much setup information to know what mm-hmm. was going on. It was a relatively simple story. So I agree.
And I think we see that for the rest of this season. Unfortunately, the rest of the season, you know. And you're talking about the horrible finale, but I thought the whole Terra Prime saga was, you know, great. And that was a great way for the series to end if it had to end. It was too bad there was no episode beyond that involved TNG coming back as a, you know, this being a holodeck program. Because that didn't happen. That was not the finale. It,
yes,
I refuse to. Right. I mean, I've heard that rumor that there was another episode beyond the Terra Prime arc, but
lost episode, right?
Yeah, it was. You know, they say that Jonathan Frakes was on it and Marina Sirtis.
Yeah, I don't believe it personally.
No, don't believe it.
I heard strange things about epaulets on uniforms and name tapes and things of that sort. I just no, it, those it, people it was, are high it, and drunk.
It's a rumor started by Star Wars fans
to discredit our franchise.
Yeah. They were still upset about the prequels, and so they were like, "Oh no, there's the Riker episode of Enterprise." No, don't believe it.
All right, so I have a question to bring up to you guys, and it sort of ties into what we're saying. But what do you think? Did Enterprise have a chance? I mean. Okay, these episodes were fun, but they had Brent Spiner in them. And, you know, I can't imagine they could spend the whole next, whatever, 3 seasons bringing on a next-gen star to do a 3-part arc. You know, the LeVar Burton arc where he plays, you know, Geordi's, Geordi's ancestor who actually invented the barrel roll. Back in the 22nd century. Obviously, they couldn't do that. Did they have... I mean, when they're doing the show right, do they have a show here, or is it still just going to fall apart?
No, they could have done the show right. That's a really awesome question because you make a great point. Is it just Brent Spiner who's like holding this thing up? No, I have like this whole list of, you know, the Enterprise relaunch scene that Ben is a giant fan of. I was too. Like that caught my attention right away, and I didn't even mind some of the recycled footage from the pilot because it was so beautifully done. Some of the music in the first episode of this arc is more aspirational than usual. There's attention to detail. Archer is using his communicator when he's in Arik Soong's room because his room doesn't have a comm panel in it because they've taken that out because they've established that in another episode. They do a space rescue where they blow a hatch off a ladderway and Archer gets sucked out in space and they beam him out. You know, like they pry some intercoolers off a Klingon warp engine and with the grappler. Like these are all cool things that we really haven't seen Star Trek do before. And it was so exciting and so cool. And it was obvious that it had gotten this injection of creative lifeblood just pumped into it. And it was so great to see. And it's just so sad that it came so late. I think if they had gone another season in this style, we would have gotten a full 7 out of it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they needed to bring someone like Brent Spiner back in. I think bringing him in for this one maybe helped kind of get people's attention again. But moving forward, I mean, we have The Forge Awakening Kirshara after this three-parter on Vulcan, which is very interesting because, you know, we didn't get to explore much about the Vulcan homeworld. Even up to this point in Enterprise, we learn a lot more about the Vulcans, but we don't actually spend a lot of time on the planet. That's great. You know, Babel 1 and United is great to find out more about how the Federation, the seeds of the Federation were planted. They were really getting into some really, really good stuff here. And I still think if the show were syndicated and not on UPN, we would have gotten 7 seasons out of it anyway, because I really think the show, I think it's a good show all the way through. I even like the season 1 stuff, but I like the talky parts of Star Trek. I can understand why a lot of fans didn't really get into it. But season 4, definitely, it was going the right way. Once we got past aliens who look like Riemanns but aren't, who are helping Nazis. Once we got past that, we got into some really, you know, interesting stuff here.
Yeah.
What do you think, Ben?
No, I think if this season had been the previous season, if we could have just shifted back and had this kind of season on the third season, that it would have definitely gone at least 5. I mean, it was just, like I was saying earlier, it was just too little too late, where people were just tired of it and you'd lost too much and you couldn't get that critical mass to save the show. And I mean, you had guys like me hanging around who you could put the Star Trek label on a black screen and just have, you know, the logo, and I would sit there for 44 minutes and just
Star Trek,
and watch it.
Black screen.
Ooh, this is new. Yeah. You know, you could have somebody bring out, you know, technical manuals. I mean, like Rick Sternbach and Mark Okuda could just sit there and go, and okay, on deck 1, we went with the taupe carpet. And now as we're moving to deck 2, this is where you're going to find, we have 3 replicators here. I would sit there for that.
So this would have been
that's
on,
how hardcore I was.
This would have been on HGTV or something like that, Home and Garden Channel.
Well, I mean, isn't HGTV premiering Larry Nemechek reads old Voyager scripts? Star Trek, Larry Nemechek reads old Voyager scripts.
I would adore that.
So instead of Home and Garden, it would be Home and Galaxy Class?
Yeah, that's right.
There we go.
So let me circle before we get too far away from it, because you reminded me, Michael, of something I also wanted to bring up. You mentioned the grappling hooks where they basically rip out the guts of a nacelle on a Klingon battle cruiser. And I like the fact that it takes a while, right? So they're just sitting there, and while the Klingons are firing at the Enterprise for so long, and Archer's like, just keep your course. Eventually, you know, it's like when you're trying to open a bottle or something, and it's like, if I turn this long enough, it will eventually come open. But also as they're going through, I guess it was before this, when the first Klingon ship approached them, and Archer pretends to have the Chancellor on board the ship. I like the fact that, first of all, the Universal Translator, which just a couple of seasons earlier required Hoshi to basically listen and herself translate things, now it's programmed with 7 dialects of Klingon. And Archer can just speak English, and it just goes through his Klingon, and somehow it picked the correct dialect as well. But yet in Star Trek 6, 100 years later, they have to pull out Klingon dictionaries, hardcover volumes.
Yeah.
What happened to the technology that they had on the NX-01?
I can try and justify that if you guys
sure.
Wanted.
That's what the show's all about.
I'd love to hear it.
I feel like cloaking technology if eventually, you know, outpaces sensor technology and then vice versa happens. I feel like there is probably pretty advanced detection algorithms that try and outpace the development of universal translators to fake stuff. So probably that back and forth happens. That or, you know, Nick Meyer just wanted a funny scene I like that.
I like your storyline though. I'm going to start developing a non-canon novel to explore this concept where they have sort of a universal translator detector on board, and Captain, I know he sounds like he's from, you know, South Kronos, but he's actually speaking
English. Yes, it's like, it's like the apps that you can download to tell you if, you know, if a person that you see on the internet that you think is attractive based on their photo is actually attractive, right, or if they're using an angle trick to conceal their lack of attractiveness.
So are you saying that you have downloaded this app, Michael, and tested out this app?
I don't know anything. I know nothing about any of it. I just read it on the newspaper.
Will's just texting Michael their pictures, and he's frantically checking them just to make sure.
I gotta go for a second.
He's like, let me save this to my camera roll so I can import it into this app and do an analysis. Oh, no. Damn, it went into photo stream. Oh, man.
Damn it. You guys don't like
it. No, it's everywhere. It's on all my devices.
No.
But Michael, so what you're saying ultimately, though, is that in order to avoid, the Klingons wanted to avoid being tricked by Federation Universal Translator technology. So they developed new detection methods. And therefore, in Star Trek VI, Uhura's broken Klingon was more convincing than the Federation Universal Translator would have been, is what you mean. So,
That would be my point. Have you read the novelization of Star Trek VI?
I think when it came out originally, but yeah, I don't remember anything about it anymore.
They fleshed that out a little bit on the back end. It's one of the few things I liked about that novel where they said, you know, the Klingons really didn't believe that Uhura was a real Klingon, but they thought it was a smuggling ship carrying some of the illegal blood wine that they were swilling or something like that.
Nice. Okay.
Yep. So that's,
do you remember that, Ben?
Yeah. That sounds, it's been a while since I've read, I look back just now, I have the novelization on my, I have all six right over there, but awesome. I remember reading an interview with Nichelle Nichols that she was really upset about the scene.
Yeah.
Because she said that, you know, someone like Uhura would know Klingon.
Sure.
She's a communication specialist. She would speak fluent Klingon, just like, you know, some of our higher level comm specialists in the Navy today or in the past would have spoken Russian.
Sure.
So when you hear these things, you would be able to pick up on it. And she was a linguist. She was a comms officer.
Well, of course. I mean, Picard speaks Klingon and he's not even a communications officer. So, of course.
I actually have a theory that Quark on DS9 actually speaks English. Because I feel like that's the sort of thing he would do. And I don't feel like some of the things he says and his inflections, that's not coming through a universal translator.
That's a good point.
Well, no, I think they made the episode where they travel back to Roswell.
Roswell.
Yeah.
And that's true. They're not speaking English.
No, they are speaking. Well, yeah, okay, I see your point. Quark was talking to the soldiers, and he wasn't because they're all Ferengi there, so naturally they're going to be speaking Ferenginite, whatever you want to call it.
Ferenginese.
Really great.
There you go, Ferenginese.
On whole wheat bread, by the way.
I was just going to say, each other. It sounds like a cheese snack, doesn't it?
It is made by Kraft.
Give me some Ferenginese and some
soda.
Yeah,
it's very popular. Comes in five flavors these days. Yeah, things advance. So,
all right. So maybe that one episode poked a hole in my theory. But I do. Yeah. I mean, there are people. Hoshi obviously speaks a bunch of languages. I bet Uhura from the JJverse
space movie 2009
can speak.
Yeah.
Exactly. She can speak Vulcan and Romulan. At least she can understand. So yeah, there's no reason that Uhura wouldn't be able to just pop out some Klingon.
Uhura can just pop out some Klingon. sounds like a show title right there.
And if you have that going the other way, it's a Dork Trek episode.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. What else do we have on our agenda here? I did want to ask you guys what you thought about Denobulan women, because that's the first time I guess we've really... Does that work for you? Or do you like the eyebrows?
I think, honestly, from watching so much Star Trek, I've become desensitized to like the facial makeup, and I just see the woman inside. I don't even notice anymore.
Deep of you,
like,
Greg.
Oh, there's like spots or a forehead or something. No, that's just a woman.
Good for you, man. That's very accepting.
I'd like to be, I'd like to be making a joke, but I'm absolutely being serious here.
So, like, were you more into the Denobulan captain than Persis?
Yeah. Persis, I don't know. She was a little, she was a little much for me.
Really?
I don't know. She might be more woman than I can handle.
Maybe more than any of us could.
I'm still waiting to meet a nice green chick and settle down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a crush on the Orion slave girls since, you know, the first time I saw them on original series. So we could, you know, have little, I don't know, olive green children and be happy.
I noticed in Borderland when the Orion slave girl came out of the cage to go up to be auctioned off, she kind of just strutted right on out of the cage. Everyone else had to be dragged out. And boy, she had some attitude going on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What isn't there a non-canon novel that explains that actually that the Orion slave girls, like, this is like their profession and they enjoy it and they're like living for it and training and stuff.
There's actually an episode of Enterprise,
right?
That addresses
there
this
is
issue.
There is actually isn't it the one where they all live in dojos and they get ready to be sold off as like sumo wrestlers are training.
The Orion slave girls are actually the ones who are in charge. The pheromone that they give off just basically dominates the male senses,
right,
and enslaves them. I mean, so they're actually the ones running the place. They just, you know, go through the motions of being slave girls to get what they want.
That makes sense.
I forgot about that episode. Yeah. Yeah.
I've completely forgotten about that, but that makes sense. What is it about green women, Ben?
I don't know.
What is it exactly?
It's because I'm too much of a Kirk fan. That if Kirk likes the green women, why don't I? And so that's one aspect of Space Movie 2009 that I can't complain about.
She was amazing.
Yep, and she was a redheaded green Orion slave girl, which never been seen before. You know.
Yeah. I paid a lot of attention to that scene. That's a really good question, though. I mean, what? Because the Orion slave girl costume for Halloween even has become a thing. Like, it's a thing that is sort of recognizable even outside Star Trek. It's almost as recognizable as like the communicator or the Vulcan ears or, you know, it's. And why is that? Yeah, I don't. There's got to be something about that. That fetish that is quantifiable and measurable and stuff. I don't know why I'm into it.
I think there's an app for that, Michael. You should download it.
Okay. I'm going to look for that.
I mean, part of my thing, I think, was every episode of the original series, or several episodes, as you go through the freeze frames at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
For years, or for many of the episodes, it's Susan Oliver as the Green Orion slave girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so you get that flash every time.
Yes. Good
point. You know, and in my young brain watching this, you know, things were going to happen. And it's like, that's what beautiful women look like. Green.
Yeah. Good point.
Does that explain my strange attraction to giant rubber faces? They're just... Because that's the other image that they show at the end of this.
Baylock or whatever? From the Corbomite maneuver?
Right, from Corbomite maneuver, but without the weird effect in the episode, but just a shot of the actual pretty horrible mask that they had.
Yeah. Oh, that was terrifying.
This might explain why the Denobulan faces don't bother you, Greg. It's, you know, after that,
this is very possible.
You're ready for anything.
That's right.
All right. Well, we've definitely gone off on a little, gone down a rat hole of some sort.
We have.
Here. But it's an interesting one. Anyway, we're hitting an hour, so why don't we come around to just the end of the episode? And one thing I did want to mention was, I thought that Malik going down with the bird of prey, self-destructing, was fine. It kind of ends. I thought the episode was going to be over. And then suddenly, he shows up in the corridor to attack Soong. And then Archer has to blow a hole through his... What?
Yeah.
What was that necessary? Did that also just seem bizarre to you guys?
Yes.
Yeah. This happens in, I mean, if you haven't seen Prometheus yet and you care for some reason, go away.
Go away.
Close your ears. There you go. Well, the bad guy, they blow him up and then he shows up like 5 minutes later. And it's this device. And Michael, you can come back now. But it's this device that,
thank you.
It's just that they use, and I don't understand. Like, if you're going to kill off the bad guy, leave him dead. There's no reason for someone to just randomly show up again right at the end. It's not shocking. It makes you confused.
I shouldn't have come back, should I?
we're back to talking about Enterprise again.
No, well, it's just a standard, but it's, you know, horror movie, it's thing, just, though, the fake death.
I thought it was completely unnecessary, and he's gone. Let him go. And this guy was in a bird of prey that self-destructed, and somehow he beamed himself off, even though he could barely pull himself up onto the control panel. And then he's perfectly fine in the corridor, and he's all strong again, and he's going to kill
his... You know, those augments are really good at pressing buttons, Chris. You saw them on Cold Station, you know, pressing those 8 buttons really rapidly. They're, you know, I bet he could work that transporter a little better than most. But no, it was unnecessary.
It was almost like it was tacked on. It was like the episode was shot to end the other way, and someone at the last minute said, why don't we take this other footage that we shot and let's just splice that onto the end of the episode? That's how it felt. It was so jarring.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was thinking maybe it was more in the lines of, you know, it's like, okay, and we're done, guys. Oh, wait, we're about 6 minutes short. Crap. We need another scene.
Yeah.
What do we have? Well, we've got that scene from Voyager of Jonas informing the Kazon about Plan White. We could splice that in, but it's the wrong series. But we are trying to build some kind of, you know, continuity, like we did on Deep Space Nine.
It ties in.
We have this alternate ending that we shot. Just throw that in.
What did that remind me of? What Western was that where the where Gene Hackman gets shot and you can see the sunlight shining through his shadow or the bullet hole in his gut? It's one of those classic Westerns from the 90s, and somebody out there will know it. I don't know. But that's what it screamed that to me, because you could see the I like that Malik got a hole shot through him, but it was right. It was just ripped right out of that movie. And I was like, oh, okay. This didn't need to be inserted.
If JJ had been doing this, there would have been a lens flare shining through the hole.
Right. Which, you know, would have made it cool for 14-year-olds at least.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any final thoughts on the augments arc here?
Brent Spiner is awesome. Bringing in elements of the original series, very cool. Having our people go on an actual, like, interesting mission that takes them to different locations and locales and discovering a mystery, very, very good. Something's going to fall down. You're going to run into a delay. Your villain's not going to be quite as interesting as he could be. I absolutely understand. So I barely even can hold it against them that Malik didn't end up that interesting. He's a TV villain, and he's there to be killed at the end to make everybody happy that they defeated evil. So in the end, I love the augments arc. It's one of my favorite things about Enterprise and about season 4. I just don't have any big issues about it, and I'm always glad to revisit it.
Yeah. I like the fact, though, with the bringing up the eugenics wars, one, you know, like you said, with the tie into the original series, but then this is something that is almost like in the DNA of Star Trek. You have the from the beginning of Star Trek, there's been the eugenics wars. Every series addressed it in some way. And we even go, I mean, when you go to Star Trek The Next Generation, there's the episode where we find the planet of genetically engineered people, and Picard has, you know, his little conniption fit about it. There's the whole thing on Deep Space Nine with, you know, the genetically engineered individuals and how society reacts to them. But so you see eugenics being a major part of Star Trek. And with this being, you know, 100 years before Kirk's time, you have eugenics stretching all the way, you know, to TNG time frame, to DS9 time frame, to Voyager time frame. So that's, what, 300 years after the eugenics wars almost, that it's still like, holy crap. That would be like us freaking out about Hitler 200 years from now. Or if we were freaking out about Genghis Khan still. You know, it's just like, no, it's okay, the eugenics thing, okay, we've grown a little bit. Maybe it's okay to change the color of your baby's eyes. I don't know. But it's like, that's like second, it's prime directive is don't interfere with society. Just under that is don't F with the genes. Mm. And, you know, so I kind of like those things that this is an ongoing thing in Star Trek.
You guys have covered the eugenics stuff and the augment stuff better than I could. For me, my final thoughts are about how much I just adored seeing Enterprise start to do the prequel details even better as we got to this point in the series. We have the kind of progenitors of the blinking red rod assembly that's always in every science fiction set and made its first appearance in Wrath of Khan.
Yep.
But we also have the early version of the green, that board of green round bridge lights that was on the bridge in Star Trek II and Star Trek III. That's in this. The background control panels on the bridge and on the Enterprise are getting closer to the original series bridge with the red, yellow, and blue flashing squares.
That was not by accident. We can talk about that on the other side of the room, Michael.
The other side of the room.
But yeah, I loved to see those little elements from the original series showing up.
I mean, there's so many of them. And I mean, there's also my favorite one of the episode, though, was the appearance of the three-sided monitor on Cold Station 12, where they controlled the plague booth. It was right off of, it was a more advanced version of the conference room one from the original series. So those and the Tellarite and all this, you know, everything... All this kind of stuff that was maybe clumsily added in earlier Enterprise episodes or maybe tacked on and felt stupid was really integrated kind of seamlessly in this one. And that was really great. Of course, culminating in the ending shot of the episode with Soong writing the first papers that will lead to the construction of B4 and Lore and Data, which very, very awesomely done fan wank there.
Yeah.
And, really, really loved it. So
yeah,
that's
bringing that back in.
My favorite part.
Yeah, it's too bad that they didn't, instead of trying to rush to get another Star Trek series out, because they don't want to have any gaps where there's no Star Trek on TV. Like if they had just kind of waited a couple of years to really formulate the series and bring someone like Manny Koto on board from the very beginning and do what they were doing here and doing a season 4 from the very, very start, I think that the series would have been enormously popular with fans. There are so many wonderful touches in here, for sure. And a great story, very exciting story. So I like this arc. Mm-hmm. Lots of fun. I like the Eugenics Wars. I wish we could have seen what happened beyond this. I guess they destroyed all the embryos when the Bird of Prey was destroyed. But, you know... They could always fall to the planet. They could always... You never know what happens there. I still want to...
Be found by some hapless scientists in a polar region of the planet.
That's right.
No. Right. Well, of course, there's you know, the Enterprise Season 5 episode, The Search for Embryos.
I do like, though, how they addressed, though, that after the eugenics wars, the reason that we kept them is that it was too politically of a hot-button issue... Which would have made sense if you look at, you know, the 90s and today.
Culture wars of the 90s,
You know, if you had 1,800 embryos frozen, you're not just going to flush them. I mean, people would freak the hell out.
Yeah.
They still would.
Absolutely, so.
Well, we did have a lot of hot-button issues in this episode, as well as tie-ins. So it was great to talk about the arc, and I wasn't sure how we were going to fit it into an hour being three episodes, but I think we did pretty well. Maybe we would have been right at an hour if we hadn't spent 15 minutes talking about women, but this is why we need to have some females on the show with us, right?
Well, it'll get worse.
Especially if we have Charlene on, but...
Right. Yeah, that would...
All right. I told her that we're going to talk about the Corbomite maneuver sometime, and she seemed very interested in coming in to talk about that. I'm not sure if she knew it was an episode from the original series or not, but. All right. Well, anyway, great to have you guys with us today, Michael and Ben. Thanks for joining us. And before we go, as always, let's give a little plug. Michael, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Fats Rikerbeard, where I tweet about things like Star Trek and pasta and train rides. And at Captain Two Phones, where I talk about technology and post articles I write and things of that nature. That's where I live, on the tubes.
Captain Two Phones, one of my favorite sketches from early 90s Saturday Night Live.
Wait, for real?
No.
I was like, I have to look this up right now.
Okay. All right. Well, Ben, tell everyone where they can find you as well.
After some controversy a few weeks ago on the Twitters, I'm giving out my real address at Reality Amok. So when people complain about me on Dork Trek, they can find me. And but you can find me most of the time at DorkTrek.com and at DorkTrek with the other gang from the USS Boner on the Twitter and the interwebs.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll have show notes to all your locations on the show page. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for coming on, guys.
Guys, thank you as always. What a blast. Ben, great to share the air with you.
Yeah, it's great seeing you and talking to you other than on text, actually speaking. So, and it's great to be back on the show. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Well, it was great to have a Michael and Ben here together on the show. Obviously, Michael's one of our longtime friends of the show, and Ben has been a friend of the show, but I think this is only his second time actually joining us.
Yeah, second time actually on the air with us, although longtime listener and someone we talked to on Twitter. But yeah, always great to have them on. And I think we had a good discussion about the Augments arc here. Big story. We could do a whole show about each individual episode, I think.
I think we could.
If we wanted to cover the details going on.
Probably do a whole show just on Orion Slave Girls.
I think so. I mean, we did like a whole 15-minute segment about Denobulan women and Orion Slave Girls. And
yep.
I don't even know who else we brought up in there. So Hiroshi statue.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Oh,
I was going to say, I was going to mention like the beginning of Borderland. At first, I didn't even know what they were going to be doing in the episode because I was too distracted by Hoshi standing there. I guess they had just beamed up and they still had their civvies on. And so I didn't even know what that whole discussion was about. Next thing I know, they're off and there's like these Superman somewhere. But anyway, again, we'll save that for our other podcast. And
we really should start that other podcast soon before it spills too much into this one.
We really should. I mean, as we were just discussing, we may start throwing together the other side of the room clips into a file that members can just download from the member section. I don't think I want to put that stuff in iTunes, but we have had quite a few people ask us about what is this stuff you guys talk about in the other side of the room? So we might do that. But until then, if you'd like to tell us what you think about the show today and the Augments or anything we talked about in news, you can go to trek.fm/contact and send us a text message. If you want to send us that audio file that we mentioned of the song that you wrote in celebration of Captain Picard Day, you can attach an MP3 file at trek.fm/contact. And we'd love to hear that too, and we might even play it in the show. Actually, I'm pretty sure we will play it in the show. And so you can do that. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, on Google Plus at hyperchannel/trekfmg+, and of course on Twitter at username trekfm. And Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
That's right. I'm there at Greg Harbin. That's GREGHARB as in boy, IN, where I'm pretty much just tweeting Prometheus spoilers all the time, just to get on Michael's nerves.
Oh, and that and baseball and...
Yeah, and baseball, constant baseball. I wore my serious hat to the Giants game today. I hope people just thought it was a Giants hat. I mean, it's orange, right? That counts.
I guess so. Too bad you didn't wear it during the show today. Maybe we would have avoided some of our rat holes, but... Although it didn't work very well during last week's show, I must say.
It didn't. I really think it only...
decrease the seriousness of last week's show. So I'm dressed up a little bit more. You know, next week you might see me in the suit. I got to listen to the show, see if I was able to get it back on track a little bit.
I do say, Greg, that my wife asked me if you have not other serious hats, but she asked me if you have all kinds of hats, you know, with different sayings on them. And I told her I didn't know yet, but we'll see what you wear.
Depending on my mood. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens next week.
Right. All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is CBrianJones, and that's Brian with a Y. And recently, I'm mostly tweeting about things I find in stores, like the solar-powered Queen Elizabeth figure that I found in Tokyo Hands last week. Or the tag that I found on a pair of shoes the other day that said, "Lust since 2005. And I don't know what that means other than... these people really need to take action because 7 years is a long time to...
Sounds like Geordi LaForge and something in the holodeck.
Exactly. Maybe that's what it's from. But also, I invite everyone to go to iTunes if you'd like to leave us a rating. We did get a new rating this week, another 5-star rating. No more reviews, but let us know what you think about the show. You can find us on Stitcher as well. If you just search Trek FM or The Ready Room, you can find The Ready Room and Matter Stream both on there. And we encourage you, of course, to go by our site. Join in the comment threads. We're using Discuss Now and Discuss or Discuss, however you want to pronounce it. And you can leave a message using an open ID or log in with your Facebook or Twitter, however you want to log in. It's quite easy. And go check out our sponsor, GiftTrek.net. Give them some love, help support the show, get some cool Trek merchandise, some t-shirts, and what have you. And if you get that Bajoran badge that Greg was talking about, let us know. If it doesn't talk, we'd be happy to record our own sound files, and you can just play those as you tap the badge. Special service from The Ready Room and GiftTrek.net.
Actually, suddenly I'm really wanting a Dork Trek branded Next Gen Com badge that just has not Patrick Stewart. Let's have a staff meeting, buddy.
That would probably jump quickly to the number one spot yes. on GiftTrek.net's best-selling items list for the week.
Yes.
I would certainly buy one. Absolutely. And maybe they'd even bring Argyle back for one of those. So.
Nice.
That would be awesome. All right. Well, I think we should let everyone go. I've got to run out. I'm going to rip the bumper off my car using grappling hooks.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to stick it with a syringe full of Rigelian fever and Tellurian plague. Because the Ready Room is done.
That makes sense, yeah. But eventually you'd think maybe you'd do something. No, Greg, that's not going to be the show title. Greg just sends me an iMessage show title, Flushing the Embryos.
That would be awesome.
Thank you, Dork Trek.
All right.
Yeah.